960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
A good Friday morning to you. It is Ryan Pinder and Bruce Dobigan in to get you into your long weekend. Mr. Dobigan, how are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I am well. I've been looking forward to working with you. I saw this on the calendar a few months ago. I've always been a fan of your work.
We'll ask you at the end of the week how you feel.
Well, we're almost at the end of the week. I think I'll still like you. The end of next week will be the whole other.
We're through next week, yes.
Always enjoyed your pieces.
Thank you.
I hate Mondays too, so you know I feel like we share a lot.
We're reviving that. We're working on a new website, and we're going to revive I Don't Like Mondays.
Cool.
Which was a lot of fun for all those years doing that.
It's fun to be grumpy and throw rocks, isn't it?
Well, that's the job of a columnist.
I know.
That's the job of somebody in our position, and I'm told that that I do cranky as well as anybody.
Well, there you are. Well, we won't be too cranky today. We're heading into a long weekend. Are you staying in town? Are you westward bound? What's happening?
I was away for the last 2 weeks. I just got back. I was back east for some things. And I went for the Canadian Open a little bit for the golf.
Yes, we had Glen Abbey.
Annual meeting of the Golf Journalists Association of Canada. And we played the Toronto Golf and Country Club, which is probably the most hoity-toity.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get in here.
Mm-hmm.
Rich people. And the amazing thing about when you have rich people is you go into the clubhouse, and the clubhouse they haven't renovated since like 1940, and that's the way they like it.
Yeah.
They've got like wire mesh on the lockers.
Yes.
The bathroom is that white industrial tile that you'd see in like the Shawshank Redemption or something. Anyhow.
It's what
I know you're a golfer, so you'd have liked that.
What billionaires do to relax, they head into some old shack from the 40s, right?
Yeah, and they wear really shabby clothes.
How did you like the Canadian Open? Before we get into the news of the day here, I just recall David Hearn being such a big story. I was in Seattle on the weekend and was watching the Golf Channel in the morning because we knew Hearn was kind of in the hunt, and he'd made a bit of a run Friday, Saturday. Said he slept well Saturday night, and then he gets to the course Sunday, and I don't know whether the driving accuracy finally caught up with him or if he was just outclassed, but it was neat to have a Canadian after 54 holes is on top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, he's had trouble finishing tournaments. We've seen that a bunch of times, that he just, you can't shoot par on the final day. Even if he led by four at one point, but you cannot shoot par, made no putts.
Yeah.
But he carries himself well. You know what I mean? He's not a guy who then, you know, does stupid stuff or whatever. I've known David for a number of years. He's a classy guy. A lot of Calgarians will remember he won the nationwide event out at Redwood Meadows here.
Okay.
Yay, those many years ago. I remember walking the course with my Commodore.
No way.
Commie and I were walking following him. Anyway, I digress. But he's a good guy. He's going to win one of these times. He's figuring out how to do it. But when you've got Jason Day, when you've got Bubba, those kind of guys behind you who know how to close, who know what to do at the end, I was really happy for Jason Day because after what happened at the U.S. Open and then the Open Championship, and he's in my pool, so all of the above to see him play. And
I thought he might be the guy at St. Andrews coming down the stretch.
I don't know how he didn't do it. I don't know how he didn't put it away because it was there. It was there. I mean, it was a cattle call, and he had a chance. And was in the right position on the final day. The weather wasn't too bad, and he just couldn't make putts. I mean, the same thing with Hearn. If you saw him a few weeks ago in that playoff, he just couldn't make a putt when he needed.
Yeah, what did he miss? Like an 8-footer to win the was it the Greenbrier or the John Deere?
It was the Greenbrier.
Yeah,
he missed an 8, and he left it short. Even worse, you know, if you go into a dressing room with PGA pros, they'll say, you know, you're allowed to miss, just miss long.
Yeah.
Don't not get the ball to the hole. And he didn't get the ball to the hole.
It's the Wayne Gretzky, you miss all the shots you don't take thing, right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't get to the hole, it doesn't have a chance.
Well,
the
other thing in that tournament was, is he gets into a playoff and his opponent hits the ball three fairways away, like that wild. And so you play golf. If you're in a match situation, you don't take out your driver and try to hammer yours. Take out your three wood, take out a shot and hit three of them down the middle and be on and putting for par because you're going to win the hole.
Yeah.
He took out the driver, put it right behind a tree. And
there you go.
That's golf.
You were back in Montreal, you said, and the travel circumstances getting back to Calgary. You happened to be at the Montreal airport at probably the worst time in the last decade. Explain the chaos because I saw it on TV and I knew that Montrealers were passionate, but this was more than I would have expected until I'd seen the video.
It's kind of where things are at in our country in terms of sports right now. But Didier Drogba, who is a big soccer star, international soccer star, an African guy.
From Côte d'Ivoire.
Côte d'Ivoire.
Yes.
I was coming into town, and literally I was coming there. I saw the Air France jet landing, and the place was absolutely thick with fans. I mean, this is the home of the Montreal Canadiens. This is the home of the Montreal Expos, and these people were like thronging the airport. Mm-hmm. The lineups to try to get even into the security area were enormous,
jeez,
and they were all wearing their Drogba jerseys. And it, like, the city was turned upside down. The talk radio, every segment was on soccer. And again,
the Montreal Impact, folks.
Owned by the Saputo family.
Yeah.
The cheese people. Saputo Field. Anyhow, they've laid out big bucks, paid at least $200,000 to get the rights from Chicago. He's not coming for free.
And then they have to pay him on top of that. He's probably $1 million player in this league at least.
Oh,
a few million.
They're not just paying on that because there were offers for him to go to other cities.
Yep.
And he decided to go to Montreal. Now, he speaks French. So Montreal was nice. Maybe he knows somebody there. The people in Montreal were absolutely over the top for this guy. And as I say, I was listening, having grown up in Montreal many years ago, and I'm going like, wow. In the offseason, Canadians are always the lead. And they had the salmon talk, and they got interested in that for 15 minutes. But then the soccer thing, and they went nuts.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
My buddy Mitch Melnick does the afternoon show there, and he's not a big soccer guy, but he just lets his little soccer friends talk, and away they went.
Yeah, well, Drogba, he's an international star for sure.
Yep.
David Price, a Blue Jay.
Yeah.
It has been 22 years. I recall being on some sort of a hockey family off-season bonding trip, and yesterday, chips in. For the first time in 22 years, they have a legitimate shot at the playoffs. They add a five-time All-Star in Troy Tulowitzki on Tuesday, and now they add the ace they desperately needed to the staff. Where were you, and has Price mania, is the Price right for you?
Well, the problem is I'm a Tigers fan, so Price going to the Blues. Well, Price going to the Blue Jays means my team giving up, but it reminded me of a trade many years ago. The Montreal Expos were in the same position. They really needed credibility in the market, and they traded for Mark Langston. And Langston was the David Price of his day in Seattle.
Okay.
Came to Montreal. He pitched well. Pitched really well, but the Expos didn't make the playoffs. And, of course, as everyone knows, the Price was Randy Johnson. And two other guys who pitched pretty well. So you traded a Hall of Famer for about, 2 months of Mark Langston. And David Price, for people who don't know, he doesn't have a contract for next year.
No, he's a free agent this winter, and he's going to command somewhere between $25 and $30 million a year.
So
this looks like a rental.
Alex Anthopoulos took what Johnny is holding in the box on the stage. He didn't want to go behind the curtain.
Yep,
so he's taking the obvious thing. Listen, they didn't give up any of their primo guys. They didn't give up Stroman. They didn't give up the kid out of the bullpen.
Osuna.
So
didn't give up Sanchez either, who they'll pencil into a starting slot next year. And people forget that Stroman, even if you lose Price, he's going to come right back into that slot. And he's not Price, but he's a front of the rotation guy.
Yeah,
so even if you don't keep Price, flags fly forever. If you can get in and make noise in the playoffs, the value to the brand is going to be well worth whatever you gave up in prospects.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I mean, it was interesting yesterday. I was listening to Greg Zahn talking about Daniel Norris. And I'm working on a book with Zahnny, so we talk a lot. And I know how detailed he is about guys. And he sort of broke down Daniel Norris as a pitching prospect. And in his estimation, Norris has to completely refine his motion before he's going to be a major league pitcher. And I thought, if that's the big guy, if that's your big catch in the trade, I don't think the Blue Jays have to be that upset.
Yeah, Boyd looks like a back of the rotation or bullpen guy, and then the young Dominican's a lefty that's a long ways away. We'll see if he ever makes it.
Power arm out of the bullpen, maybe, but that's 3 years from now.
And who knows, right? These guys, their arms could fall off. I mean, they're pitchers. This is betting on pitching prospects is the toughest thing to do. It's like horse racing.
Think of the guys the Blue Jays have given up in trades to get stars, like the guys they gave up to Miami. Those guys are all highly touted prospects. Mm-hmm. Nothing. And I'm not a big fan of the pitching coach in Detroit. He hasn't really turned anybody into anything there.
Yeah, the bullpen's been, we can't say those words on the radio. Here's Zahnny from yesterday to take us to break. Pressure's on the players now.
Well, I mean, I look at the situation and think, okay, they got Tulowitzki, they're going to go and out slug people. They go out and basically flip the baseball world on its ear and do exactly what nobody was expecting and acquire the best guy out there, plain and simple. And they didn't have to give up a whole lot to do it. So to me, this puts the players under the microscope. They've got all they need now, in my opinion, outside of maybe a left-handed power bat and a left fielder or whatever to play some defense. But they look awfully competitive to me.
1993 was the last time they make the playoffs. They now sit two games back of the second wild card in the American League and six back of the Yankees. More Jays talk. We'll get into the NHL and touch Deflategate with Bruce. I know you're shaking your head, but we have to. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Back to the East, where I spent, you know, parts of seven seasons, you know, in my career, you know, in that division. So I'm definitely, you know, very familiar with all the teams in that division and all the cities that you go to in that division as well.
That's David Price. He knows the AL East well, and for Blue Jays fans, this was public enemy number one. Price has pitched nine times at the Rogers Center, seven and oh. This is the guy they've added. He is a legit front of the rotation stud. Pinder and Dobigan in for your Friday into the long weekend. The Major League Baseball trade deadline rolling by at about 2 p.m. Mountain Time, 4 Eastern, as we get set. This is it. You can add guys after the non-waiver deadline. It's just more difficult to do. Other teams can claim them on waivers. Teams can remove them off waivers. You can't seem to get the kinds of haul in a deal and the caliber of player that you can up until 2 o'clock today. This is last call for pretenders versus contenders in the trade market.
Can you imagine if the NHL had a rule where in the last month of the season you could expand your roster to like 30 guys? I mean, you can carry as many as 40 guys on a major league roster for the final month of competition. They think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, well,
you can add a guy after September 1st. He just can't play in the postseason for you. I mean, they got all of this stuff in baseball that hockey doesn't have.
Yeah, it would be similar to Black Aces, I guess, except the difference being that, yeah, like you can, there's legitimate prospects that are rounding into form in the fall. You don't often see what we saw with Sam Bennett. The prospects either come in the fall and they stick, or they're around, they wait until next year in hockey. In baseball, the late summer edition via the farm system is a real thing.
Yeah, and you can dress these guys. It's as if you could put like another 10 guys on an NHL bench. You bring up the Abbotsford guys because they're finished. And I just sit there and, you know what, he's a little tired. We'll put another guy out for a shift, etc.
Where were you in 93? Because it was a long time ago, and the conversation has stopped being about the Jays and their needs and historically how significant a return to the playoffs could be. And I guess that's an appropriate conversation when you add two players in 3 days of the caliber of Tulowitzki and Price, five-time All-Stars each. But take us back to 93, and how has it been 22 bloody years?
I was on the field, not to brag, I was on the field because we were doing television in Toronto. I was on the field in Atlanta with a TV crew, and then I did the one in Toronto as well. And I can tell you, I never thought, as I was running out there trying to get to Robbie Alomar to say something, I can tell you, I never thought that the Blue Jays would be this long getting back in the postseason. They were, at that time, they were the Chicago Blackhawks of baseball. They were the team that knew how to do it. And they had Pat Gillick, and they had all the right guys in place. Cito Gaston, nobody said was a great manager, but he didn't get in the way of the talent. They had the biggest payroll.
That's the big thing everyone forgets. Yeah. They were the Yankees in the mid-90s. They had a brand new
state-of-the-art
facility.
They taught George Steinbrenner how to do that.
Yeah, and they outspent people.
Yeah.
They did, what you just said, I couldn't have said it better. They taught George Steinbrenner how to win. Yep. You have to outspend people and be a bully.
At the time when you got the team and you're ready to go, and that's kind of what we're seeing here with the David Price thing, is I think it's less here they think, we can win the World Series, then you know what? Our market is so completely sour on us and our willingness, not our ability, but our willingness to do what we can do, that at least this will buy us some peace and quiet this winter. We tried.
The whole Rogers won't spend argument, it's been tossed from the moving vehicle on the highway. That will not be picked up for some time. Yeah. They have made chips to the middle decisions this week. Tulowitzki is owed $20 million until, I think, 2017.
Yep.
Or 2020 even, team control. And they have an option for 2021. And Price is earning $19.8 million this season, which doesn't matter a ton because you've only got less than a third of a season, or probably just a shade under the half of a season to go. But he's a free agent. So yep. This is a move where you have given up future assets for 2 months. And maybe you can re-sign this guy, but let's be honest. The Jays have not been interested in signing long-term deals and hundreds of millions of dollars deals, which is what price will dictate. The thought from people that know more than I do, $26 to $30 million.
He'll get Max Scherzer money.
Yeah, more.
And are you, if the Blue Jays are willing to give him that, and I think you have to consider that he's a healthy guy, that he's pitched, but he pitches a lot of innings, and he could be around for a few years. But if you want to do something with him and pay Scherzer money, then somebody else is going out the door. And I just keep getting this feeling that the Blue Jays might like to move Bautista along.
Or Encarnacion. They're in the same Either situation. One. Both of them have club options for next season.
Yeah.
The likelihood you can extend both of them, probably not huge. I think one of two is very realistic, but they're both top of the market sluggers, if Edwin can turn this around a little bit, that probably dictate around $20 million a year. I don't know that you have $40 million for both of those guys. You probably have 20 for one, though.
Yeah. They're 5 and 10 guys, which is to say that they have the right about trades to dictate about trades, where they go, where they don't want to go, etc. So that might complicate things. I would think that the obvious guy is Encarnacion, but I just keep getting the feeling you're asking me about 93. The thing that changed the Blue Jays in 92 and 93, I'd covered them almost on a daily basis from 85 when Bobby Cox started to make them into a good team till they won the World Series, is that they had a lot of jerks on the team. There were the clubhouse and the atmosphere around the team with George Bell, Dave Steeb, those kind of guys, was a little too loose and a little too unfocused. And what happened was Pat Gillick brought in, first of all, he brought in Dave Winfield for 92, and then he brought in Paul Molitor for 93, and they were pros, and they taught those guys how to win. And I just have a feeling about the way the clubhouse has been in the last little while with the secret handshakes and the whole dancing and all that type of stuff when you're five games back and you're acting like you're five ahead, that has rubbed people the wrong way. So if they decide to have a culture change in that dressing room, Bautista might be the guy to go. And I love him. I think he's a great player, and he's a heart and soul guy. But I'm just not sure how they feel about him as a guy at the center of their clubhouse.
Well, if you don't like dancing and celebrating, you love the Tulowitzki deal, because no one dances and celebrates more than Jose Reyes yes. with the crazy hair and the racing stripes in his eyebrow.
Yeah.
Not sure what that's about, but they have changed the culture. Lind is gone. Rasmus is gone. Jansen made some noise at the deadline last year. He's no longer around, and Reyes as well. So I think Alex has said, heading into this season, being a guy that came from a scouting and numbers background, not a playing background to be a GM, he didn't feel that early in his GM career he'd placed enough value in the clubhouse culture.
Right.
And that was one of the things he addressed this offseason. And without saying anything, he says a lot when he moves out Rasmus and Lind, and now Reyes, who was killing them with his defense.
Yeah. I mean, David Price is a David Winfield, Paul Molitor kind of guy in the clubhouse too. That's his rep. Brad Ausmus, the Tigers manager, said yesterday, he said one of the top three guys in the clubhouse I've ever been around. And Ausmus has been in baseball all his life, so he knows a few people.
I don't know if you remember his debut in the majors, David Price.
That was in the World Series, wasn't it?
He came in the playoffs and closed for them. He's a college guy drafted, I believe, in 06 or 07.
Out of Vanderbilt.
And by 08, yeah, he was drafted in 07, and then in 08, there he is, closing games in the playoffs for the Rays, who could pitch. And I mean, you think they can pitch now? This was before they sold Shields and Kazmir, all these other guys. The Rays, all they do is groom amazing pitchers, it seems, and Price was just another in the long line. He came in and closed games as a kid that had minimal major league experience, ice water in his veins. Yeah. I mean, very impressive at that point. And I don't think we need to talk about the resume from that point on. He's a Cy Young winner from 2012. Ironically, the Jays now have both Cy Young winners, because Ari Dickey won the NL Cy Young in 2012.
Yeah, Zahn said it best yesterday. He was talking about him. He's the kind of pitcher who says, here's my best stuff, hit it. He's not about, I'm going to try to fool you. He's about, my best stuff is better than anything you've got.
Yeah.
Here, try to hit it. And it works. And he's got that kind of mentality. It's funny, too, because when he came to the Tigers, whatever it was, a year and a half ago, they had three Cy Young winners. They had Scherzer, they had Verlander, and they had him. Now the Tigers only have a very sort of faded version of Verlander and nothing else to show for it.
Yeah, Scherzer's in Washington. They also lost Rick Porcello. Anibal Sanchez is still around. Like, it was quite a staff Detroit's got, and they finally decided to sell after years and years of being a contender and buying at the deadline. They recoup some prospects in the form of Daniel Norris, Matt Boyd, and a young Dominican lefty who throws gas, apparently, which may or may not mean anything.
A few years away as a situational lefty. Those guys, he'd probably be pitching at 46. If you're a situational lefty and you know what you're doing, you'll be in the major leagues at 46.
That's right.
Still spinning it, Bob McClure, getting guys out.
It's interesting. Tonight, it'll be the Kansas City Royals trotting out their new addition. Johnny Cueto will go for the visitors at the Rogers Center tonight in the second of four straight. 5:07 first pitch, Sportsnet West. We'll join it at 6 o'clock in progress following the big show tonight. Drew Hutchison, boy, he has been the most consistent, inconsistent pitcher ever. He's always inconsistent. Last year, he was dreadful at home and awesome on the road. This year, he is a replacement. He's a AAA pitcher on the road, and he's an ace at home. His ERA, about 2.5 at the Rogers Center. It's about 9 on the road. So it'll be fun to see what happens there with Hutchison. Cueto makes an already dominant Royals club, best record in the American League, even better. We'll come back. Lots of texts coming in at 960-960. Has price mania caught you? Are you now planning out flights to Toronto in September and October? Or maybe you just be a little more patient. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is Pinder and Dobigan on your Friday morning. Hope you got a great long weekend lined up. Maybe you're going to the Stamps game. Will you heckle or cheer Nick Lewis? Maybe you will be sitting on your couch drooling over the Toronto Blue Jays lineup that, in theory, could now go Tulowitzki, Donaldson, Bautista, Encarnacion, Martin. Oh, I mean, Wamco is one thing, but this
they banged
is
a, it looked pretty good last night, too.
Again, and that's 13 runs in the last two games since the deals. And I don't know about you, but if I was one of those guys on that team and saw the ads the Jays have made with Tulowitzki's debut on Wednesday night and now Price into the full, I'd be swinging out of my shoes at every at-bat. I mean, these guys got to be pumped.
I thought for a while it was going to be like a 17-12 game last night, the way the two teams started out. Settled down a little bit. I mean, Josh Donaldson has got to be up there for the MVP this year. He's got to be one of the guys certainly in the discussion.
What he will be is a good season, probably the best in the league. Too bad there's a kid named Mike Trout.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be for Donaldson. Trout has just been that dominant for the Angels, who actually are in a bit of trouble. They just got swept by the Astros.
But if Donaldson makes the playoffs and Trout doesn't, then he's got an arguing point.
I would agree. Yeah, at this point, I think it's Trout, but you're right. If the Angels find a way to fall out of this thing, that certainly could change the voting. Indeed. Off we go to the text line, 960-960. Hey, Pinder, if Edwin is out and Burley is gone, do you buy out R.A. Dickey next year and then have money for Price? Well, I think they're going to exercise the option on Edwin if he's still around. And we'll find out at 2 p.m. today if he's around. Yeah. You mentioned it. He's got 5-10 rights, which essentially means he's got no trade. He can dictate if he's going to get moved, where he's going to go. And I don't know that if you're Alex, this is the time to move him. You're geared up. You want to hang a banner at Rogers Center. You're not worried about payroll.
Well, it depends what you would get
year.
Back.
That's true.
If you get another David Price kind of pitcher in exchange for Edwin Encarnacion, then maybe you're talking. That guy isn't in the market that we can see, so it's not likely.
Another text coming in, 960. I finally feel like my phone bill is justified. Bruce, there's a lot of that out there. When this Jays team was bad, it was. It felt like an anchor on the Rogers logo. It just, you talk about goodwill, you talk about a brand and its worth and its value. This helps Rogers, and these are the guys that cut our checks. I'm not here to pat their backs, but this is, to be honest, there was an easy reason to get mad at the big multinational if the Jays were bad.
Yeah.
I suppose there's reason to say, all right, this is why I have a red phone bill, not a blue or a green one.
Yeah, I did a piece a few years ago when things were kind of negative about how a lot of the other teams were, and we just saw it yesterday, St. Louis Cardinals signing a huge regional media deal. And all these teams were doing this. And the Blue Jays, because one branch of Rogers owned the baseball team, et cetera, we weren't hearing how much was going between. And we were wondering whether the parent company was starving the baseball team. No one still to this day will tell us how much the contract is worth on Rogers' books to get that money. But we were raising the question, if they're not getting the big amount from the Rogers Corporation, how can they compete with the teams that were doing it?
And they should have the most valuable TV deal.
Sure.
They average the most viewers of any Major League Baseball team. I think they average about $300,000 in New York. I'd seen a number somewhere for the Yankees, which is significant. That's, you know, one out of every, let's say, 30 or 40 New Yorkers. That's impressive. But you've got a market of 35 million people for the Blue Jays. You're coast to coast. You own the team. You own the network. It's content which you need I don't know whether it matters which pocket it goes from or goes to or comes from, but
they weren't the signs weren't there that they were spending.
Yes, you cannot question their appetite to win at this point. You could before.
They weren't spending, and needless to say, they were very happy when the piece came out with me. They just called me up and said, what a wonderful piece of needless to say, yes. I was not popular with the Jays. But, you know, we gave them a chance to respond. Paul Beeston talked about it. Clearly, they're feeling that pressure from the community that show us that you care, show us that you're doing something. There's a new president coming in this year. That's the other part of this. Is a lot of this because Alex Anthopoulos is trying to save his job. He needs a dramatic move so this summer, this winter, he can say, hey, to the new president, I should still be your guy.
Well, and here's the thing. If he does the job that he's trying to do, which is hang another banner, there's your president.
Yeah.
Am I crazy for thinking that? I mean, why not? Hasn't he done if he – and listen, it's a huge thing to say, oh, and if they do this. It's a huge if. But I like a lot of what he's done.
Right.
Like, where's he screwed up? The team's more competitive than it's been. I think the brand has been returned to a place close to where it was in the mid-90s. They've come back to the original logo. They're taking guys across the country. Why not Alex if they can get into the playoffs? I mean, that alone would be the biggest achievement.
You're saying
in the
Alex
last 20
as, the,
years.
As the president?
Yeah.
The president job, it's like the president of the Flames. I mean, most of the president's job is dealing up with the owners. Alex's thing is dealing down with the personnel, with the stats, with understanding that type of thing. That's his specialty. By the way, when he was a teenager, he was in a rotisserie team with me, or league.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Because he's a Montreal guy, and his dad owned a heating and cooling company of some sort. His father passed away, and he and his brother were sitting around, and he was the biggest baseball junkie of all time. And they got a little bit of money when they sold the old man's business, and I guess Alex's friends and brother and family just said, look, if you want to pursue this, go down to scouting school in Florida, spend a little dough on it, and chase your dream. It's an incredible story.
He did it. We had a league. We knew everybody in the league. And then 1 year, somebody dropped out. So we advertised for somebody new. Nobody knew who Alex was. I never heard the last name until later. When a friend of mine said, oh, yeah, that, by the way, he was the guy we had. And, of course, he won the league.
Interesting.
But I don't think I'd make him a president. I think general manager is where he should be. There are still going to be questions as to whether he's the guy.
I'm
surprised that we talk about this with GMs around the NHL all the time. Will they give him the money when he looks like a lame duck? Will they give him the money to do the stuff he needs to do? We look around the NHL this last year, a few GMs who were on the hot seat.
Yep.
The team's saying, you know what? We're probably going to replace him this summer. Don't let him do any of these moves.
Interesting thing is when they talked about candidates of guys that could come in and be the president, they talked about a lot of GMs. I mean, Dan Duquette, what's he? GM Baltimore.
Talking about Dombrowski, too.
GM in Detroit.
Yeah.
So the only reason I put Alex's name out there is because you think of president, you don't think GMs, but that's all the guys they were looking at were GMs elsewhere in the league. Back to the text line we go, 960-960. Poor Danny Duffy having to face that right-handed murderer's row last night. Left-handed pitchers don't stand a chance against the Jays. It is true. If there's one thing, I don't know if it's a flaw, but it is the most hard-hitting right-handed lineup we have seen. They used to have Adam Linden there to break it up. It's righties all the way down. It's almost, you know, it's probably 6-7 deep, just righties. And when you're a left-handed pitcher, that is the last team you want to see when they pin up the lineup in the dugout.
Duffy's body language last night after every home run just said it all. It was one of those ones where, how did he hit that pitch? And it wasn't like Donaldson just sort of eased it over the fence. I mean, they were into the second deck.
I said with Tulowitzki the other night, I mean, welcome aboard, top of the second tank. Now, someone was confused yesterday on the text line. The name of yesterday's pitcher again, the lefty for Kansas City, was Danny
Duffy.
Danny Duffy. Because we have a guy that's from Newfoundland that comes on the show a bit. He's a rapper. His name's Danny Dumphy.
$50 rolling smokes for motor. First thing I bought was a case of beer and a rubber. I was born in the cab and the boys were too. Looking at each other, sure our dogs ain't you. There's nothing like sitting with a bottle of screech, a purity cracker and a bucket of salt beef. Then heads to Jimmers to get me script, and you know what that means, 1,200 grits!
Danny Dumphy. So that different
same
guys,
guy,
right? Same guy?
Oh, sure, must be.
Danny's got an accent a bit there. Like,
yeah,
you can hear
no,
the new
I don't think it's the same guy.
No, different guy. No. Is he in the six-disc changer in the back of the car for you or not?
Yeah, with the bricks to keep the tracks.
Down
and the back of the
me.
Old Pontiac GT. Love the Rock.
Danny, can't you see? We'll be back in a moment. Bruce Tobing and Ryan Pinder.
How do you know about this music? Is this Jason?
Donnie.
Brenda, what do you want?
Take us for a ride. Take us for a jaunt.
take us for a jaunt, Donnie. We'll be back. More Jays talk. And we'll get into some NHL talk as well. As I think we got, is there a cap crunch on the horizon for Brad Treliving and the Flames? Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Stephen Brunt, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. Check out the 2015 Audi A4. With timeless style, German performance credentials, and unrivaled craftsmanship, the A4 is the ultimate overachiever. See for yourself.
It is 6:40. We are on a Friday morning heading into your long weekend. Our next guest joins us from an easy chair in Newfoundland, adorned with a blue number 14 David Price jersey. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, Ryan, how you doing?
I'm awesome, man. Big news yesterday. Where were you?
Well, I was, you know, hanging out in my summer retreat here, where, you know, where sometimes cell service and things go in and out. And it was, I picked up my phone at one point and it kicked in. I was out fishing as usual, and it was one of my editors from the magazine saying, "We might want to change that column you wrote, you know, because of the Price thing." And I thought I kind of put two and two together and said, boy, you're kidding me. That's what they pulled off. So I'm like everybody else. You know, this, I knew they were going to get a pitcher. I knew Alex Anthopoulos was going to get somebody. I didn't think they'd pull off David Price.
Hey, Steve, Bruce Dobigan. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Bruce.
A bunch of questions come into mind. I suppose the other thing when you heard the news was kind of a flashback to 92, 93 when the Blue Jays regularly pulled off these kind of deals and they're winning World Series, et cetera. How much of this is smoke and how much of this is mirrors in terms of getting to the postseason?
Well, you know, they've got a really good team. You know, they've got a really good team with just over a 500 record. So, you know, I think that's part of what we're talking about here is that the potential, it's not phony. You know, this team that run differential is not insignificant. They've been a bit unlucky and they've been a bit bad in key places occasionally, you know, relief pitching, sometimes some starting pitching, sometimes defensively. But there's a core there that's really, really good. You know, David Price, they're going to get six starts out of him between now and the end of the season, maybe seven. But, you know, so he's not going to do it all by himself. But I think, you know, you could kind of see it last night, the way there's been a change. And I'm not one of these intangible guys. I don't believe in that stuff generally. But there's been a kind of a change in tone there. You've got a team that kind of goes out now and I think expects to win. They look around at the other guys and say, you know, that guy's really good. This guy's really good. You know, putting David Price out there six times, everybody understands that all of those starts, David Price is going to give you a very good chance to win. And he's going to protect your bullpen a little bit because he's going to go innings. And he's an intimidator. You know, he's one of the handful of legitimate number ones in baseball, unequivocal number ones. So, the Jays went out once upon a time and got Ricky Henderson. He didn't actually mean that much that year. You know, they went out and got some other guys who did mean more. Sometimes these late deadline deals are more, you know, almost for show. You know, it's almost kind of sending a message to the clubhouse.
Right.
But I think in this case, you're sending a message, but you're also getting a guy who is special.
But one of the things about those 92, 93 years, and I was just talking a little bit here, I remember back to that point, was that the addition of guys like Winfield and Molitor changed that dressing room. It turned it from a George Bell circus into a place where guys were, I think, a little more businesslike. I wonder how, I mean, again, the Price thing is short term, but I wonder how much we're also seeing a kind of a re-engineering maybe of the dressing room and the dressing room culture with the Jays in this last week.
Well, we saw that over the winter too, Bruce. You know, like I think that if you look at the exits and the entries over the winter in terms of clubhouse culture, I think Alex Anthopoulos was a skeptic on that stuff as well. You know, I think he was one of the guys, and like same thing I've always thought: best team wins. You know, by and large, if you know, the guy best players playing the best are going to win, and it doesn't matter if they like each other or if they hate each other. Winning teams are always happy, and losing teams are always miserable, in my experience. But Adam Lind out, Casey Jansen out. Brett Laurie out to a degree.
Rasmus
out. And then Donaldson and Martin. That was the beginning of the culture shift, was bringing in those two guys who had played for winning teams and are very businesslike. That's the right word. And that's what I was thinking about last night. You know, Look, I'm all for. I've known these guys that said they shouldn't celebrate and have their little secret hand signals and high five and smile at each other in the dugout. That's fine. All that stuff is cool, as long as you win. Then it's fine.
Yes.
But the team last night looked a little different than that. You know, it had a kind of, we're going to get down to business. We're serious about this. We understand. But a real aura of confidence as well because of the talent level. And I think that is something that change in culture started last winter, and I think it continued with the two deals this week. You know, look at Tulowitzki. There's a guy who, the thing you keep hearing about him is that the only thing he cares about is baseball. That he is all baseball off the field and all baseball on the field. You know, that's, you know, might make him not the most interesting human being in the world, but if you have him on your team, it's probably a pretty good thing.
Are they done, Steven? What do they need to address, or is this pretty much it in terms of the prospect capital you can spend?
Yeah, they've got, you know, I would say that if they could get a controllable arm for the rotation, a depth guy, not somebody spectacular. I think they would do that, because if you look at what's left at AAA, you know, if they have an emergency here in terms of the rotation, you don't want to have to bring Felix Dubront back up. You don't want to have to start Randy Wolf. But that's it. I think Dalton Pompey is going to get called up to play left field. He's been playing really well in Buffalo. I think the bullpen, you saw it last night. There's your bullpen. You know, LaTroy Hawkins to Sanchez to Osuna, with Cecil now in more of a situational role. I'm fine with that. Sanchez did it last year. He was effective. It's not like he hasn't done it before. And Osuna has been very, very good. So these are your 2015 Toronto Blue Jays right now, I think, pretty much.
Quick one for you. If you had to put a percentage on postseason play for Alex's Jays, what would the number be?
Well, it's better than half right now. You know, they're two games out of a second wild card. The Yankees, Pineda just got put on the DL. I think New York is still doing it a bit with smoke and mirrors. You know, I think it's a very reachable goal. They got approximately 60 games left. You know, can they win 40 of those 60 games? That's a big ask, but that would get them the division, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you win 35 of those games, you probably get the wild card, and I think they can certainly do that.
Well, one final question before we move on to the CFL. I'm kind of interested that the Blue Jays let Alex do these deals. We know that there's the situation in the summer with the new president coming in. There's a lot of pressure. At certain times this year, we thought Alex was a dead man walking. Just your sense of the Blue Jays letting him do this.
Well, you know, the thing is, Bruce, from what I can tell, you know, he basically did it within the budget parameters that he was given. So there's, you know, there's a long-term commitment to to Tulowitzki. But, you know, that'll be dealt with down the road. You know, I think these deals were revenue neutral pretty much. And I think he has the power to make deals within his budget. I don't think he had to get permission to do that. You know, maybe the long-term commitment to Tulowitzki. But even then, that'll have to do with the 2016, 2017, and 2018 budgets. So I think he does have a bit of autonomy operating this season. You know, the interesting question is now, and I don't think it should be a question. I would have said this before the Price deal. You know, he should keep his job. They're going to bring in a new president who might have different ideas, but I'm not sure what else Alex Anthopoulos could have done in the last 8 months. You know, to bring in Donaldson, Martin, Tulowitzki, and Price, that's pretty darn good. If it's my team, he's coming back next year, and he's got a nice long-term deal.
I don't know when the news broke, Stephen, but I'm sure you were at the ready whenever the cell service kicks in and celebrating when you found out that Beijing has been selected to host the 2022 Winter Olympics. Back to China we go.
Yeah, isn't that great? Well, you know, they had no choice, though. Well, they had a choice. They could have gone to Kazakhstan.
Yeah, there's no other choice, was there?
There's no other choice. And, you know, the small problems in China, you know, the mountains aren't anywhere near Beijing. Those mountains don't tend to ever have snow on them. The thing's going to be spread out for, you know, vast distances. And then there's all the other China issues that we dealt with when the summer games were there. But, yeah, this is one where, you know, this was an Olympics. This was supposed to go to Norway. It was supposed to go to Oslo. And it was absolutely a slam dunk that they were going to get it. And then the Norwegians had a plebiscite and said, we don't want to spend the money. So, You know, that maybe tells you something about where the Olympic business is right now.
Well, how different is it than what we saw with FIFA, you know, following, you know, not necessarily the most sound regimes and more of the dollars? I mean, the IOC has been accused of some heinous things as well. I mean, all of a sudden, Qatar, Russia on the World Cup circuits, and now we're choosing between Kazakhstan and China in a place that really isn't known as a winner city. Is the gig up here yet or what?
Well, I think what happened, you know, that those other ones like the Qatar and, you know, people still want the World Cup. And, you know, the issue there is like what we dealt with the IOC back around Salt Lake City and the Beijing summer bid and the Atlanta bid, you know, which is bribery and corruption. You know, I think what you're seeing in this case is that there are very few countries and especially very few functioning democracies that want to take on the cost of staging Olympic Games, you know, and especially it would appear a Winter Olympic Games where you build a bunch of facilities that, you know, are not necessarily going to be that useful down the road. So, you know, I don't think Beijing had to bribe anyone to get these games. I don't think they had anywhere else to put them.
Yeah, two people I can think of that are happy. First of all, Gary Bettman, because he knows he doesn't want to go to Korea, and he's not going to go back to Asia a second time. This makes it so much easier for him to look around the NHL and say, all right, that experiment is over. The other guys who I think are looking at this and you know, say maybe Toronto instead of beating its brains in for a Summer Olympics, hey, you can do a Winter Olympics. If Beijing can, so can you.
Well, you have to build themselves a mountain. That's a little problem. You still have to run the downhill somewhere, and I don't think it's going to work in Collingwood.
You don't think Blue Mountain? Come on, they'd be down in 30 seconds. It'd be great TV. Yeah, listen, you know, they can always fly everybody out to Alberta for the ski events and do it that way.
Well, yeah, it'd be probably cheaper than building your own ski. You know, well, they were going to have the one in Quebec City, you know, the Marcelo Boo game
bid
for the Winter Games, and he was just going to pile, you know, a bunch of gravel on top of Mont Saint-Anne, I think, and do it, so, or Le Massif. So, oh, who knows? I guess, yeah, build a mountain and they will come.
CFL, Stephen, everyone has two or three wins in a nine-team league except the Saskatchewan 0-5ers. Have we been amazed or dazzled by anyone? Is this mediocrity or is this parity?
I think the Argos are way better than I thought they'd be. So, especially with, you know, with no Ricky Ray. So, I guess I'll tip my cap to them, although we'll see what happens with that. Hamilton-Toronto game is going to be pretty interesting because Hamilton's getting healthy. They got a bunch of guys coming back this week, and I thought they looked pretty good against Saskatchewan. But the rest, yeah, it's a dog's breakfast right now. I don't think we've got a great team. And again, watching the Stamps last week, and we were talking before that game, you know, about, you know, the injuries to the offensive line and what it was going to mean. And I think, you know, you kind of see the domino effect there where, you know, now Cornish gets hurt as well, but, you know, that whole offense stems, John Cornish has to roll. And for John Cornish to roll, you have to have a good offensive line. And if you take that away, then Bo Levi Mitchell's got to do things that I'm not sure he can do by himself, you know, even with a pretty good receiving core. But, you know, they're not alone. You know, look at every team in the league's kind of like that. You know, BC last night looked awful.
Yep.
And I'm not totally sure why they looked awful, but they really looked terrible against a really crappy Winnipeg team that, you know, they made look relatively competent.
It's a Gary Bettman league. Close is exciting, according to Gary Bettman. And so the CFL is going to have lots of close games and lots of, you know, guys all at 500. Gary thinks that's wonderful. That's the way it works.
Well, yeah, it just seems to me I've spent a lot of time watching flags being thrown, you know, a lot of less than spectacular play. And yeah, it feels like the league is in a bit of a funk, and that could change as we go on through the season, and you know, some quarterbacks mature or some teams get healthy. The other X factor for that, you know, the interesting thing for the league is a lot of the success of the CFL in the last decade, you know, the financial success, the big TV contract, which is driven by big TV numbers. A lot of that starts with Saskatchewan.
Yep.
That you've had great Saskatchewan teams, and everyone in Saskatchewan watches, and they drive an enormous amount of revenue through that franchise. Well, you know, we haven't seen a really crappy Saskatchewan team in a while. And, you know, what happens if the bloom comes off that rose? Not just for that team, but for the league.
Well, you remember, Steve,
that's what we're looking at.
A few years ago, the Argos and Saskatchewan missed the playoffs, and TSN's numbers went down by 100,000 people a game. I mean, they suffered like a quantum drop-off. The sense I get in watching this season is the CFL is just trying to get through this season to get to next year with the Argos at BMO Field and quote-unquote, a new day. To me, this is just a kind of a marking time season for the CFL, at least at the headquarters, and I just don't get any sense of momentum about where they're going.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point, Bruce. Like, it's certainly the Argo. I think they would like people to avert their eyes when the Argos finally start playing home games, because no one is going to be there.
They should have David Price at kickoff or something like that. That might get them more fans there. Yikes.
Well, yeah, it's going to be bad. You know, they got terrible dates in the stadium. They've done no marketing at all. They're kind of a lame duck team in a lot of ways. And yeah, the rebirth in BMO, and we'll see how that goes. So yeah, you know, I think that's a good point, that it's kind of in some ways, in terms of the kind of macro story of the league, they would just as soon just get this one behind them and maybe not have a lot of people notice.
On the grander scale of things, we were talking about it with Bruce. He was trying to get out of Montreal to get back to Calgary, and that happened to coincide with Didier Drogba's arrival and the airport getting swamped by tens of thousands of Montreal Impact fans. I don't know if that's ever happened in the CFL. Like, if Doug Flutie was traded, you could probably still get in and out of an airport. Where are we at with soccer on the national scale versus the CFL? I know Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, MLS is winning this thing. I really think they are.
They are, you know, I guess that's, you know, I've got a buddy of mine and I have this discussion all the time. He's not a soccer guy at all. But I think he's right in this, that, you know, there's a local passion for those teams, you know, I think in Vancouver, there's a regional thing with Seattle and Portland as well. What the question would be, how many people who are not in the stadium care? The TV numbers would suggest not a ton.
Yeah.
And how much of a conversation can you have about the MLS outside of the guys on your home team? And the answer is generally not much. You know, like, no one is sitting in Toronto. You couldn't have a talk radio conversation in Toronto about Kansas City or Houston, you know, or the New York Red Bulls. You know, you could talk about maybe Didier Drogba showing up in the league, or Pirlo showing up in the league. But we don't talk. It's not still not talked about day to day like we can talk about the CFL.
Steve, I have to tell you, I was amazed in driving around. I was listening to the TSN radio station in Montreal, your good buddy Mitch Melnick. Mm-hmm. And outside of Mitch, that's all they talked about. They talked about every segment. They hammered the Drogba thing. They were in love with it, et cetera. And while I agree with you that it hasn't got a national conversation, baseball's a regional sport. Maybe they're using the regional sport model that baseball does to create a national consciousness. I don't know. All I can tell you is I was amazed at how much they were into this particular event.
Oh yeah, no, and it's you know, in Toronto with Defoe coming last year and Giovinco to a lesser degree this year, although he's been way better, obviously. The same thing, you know, that's the star coming to town, big deal. The people in the stands, big deal. You know, when David Beckham came to Toronto, huge deal. But I still, you know, it's still easier. You could still easier to have a conversation about the Premiership and, you know, the upcoming season than it is to have about who's doing well in MLS, even among football, soccer fans. So that, you know, maybe one leads to the other, but it hasn't so far.
No, it's a good point. The TV numbers have not followed suit at all. It's the attendance numbers that are wildly different, or at least awfully impressive for MLS. One final one for you, Steven. The biggest buffoon in this whole Deflategate. I'll list you some options. Roger Goodell, Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, or the ball handlers. Who are the biggest buffoon or buffoons in this thing?
That's a great one. I actually kind of feel sorry for Robert Kraft, because I don't think, you know, I think he believed in his guy, and I think he believed in Goodell, and I think both of them let him down. You know, it's a kangaroo court. Everybody knows that, but the players agreed to it. That's part of, you know, that's how they in the collective agreement, and we'll see what the federal court says now. But, you know, I think the NFL has operated in a, you know, sleazy way in the way they've released information to kind of cover themselves. You know, the cell phone destruction thing got out really fast. They're not operating on the up and up, but I also think Tom Brady ordered those two mopes to deflate footballs for him and then tried to cover it up. So I don't know. I'm trying to find a good guy in this one. I haven't found one.
But the statement from Kraft was an amazing statement from an owner being that brazen and basically coming out and saying, you know, my commissioner let me down. I put my trust in the commissioner and he let me down. That was, man, I can't think of a public statement from an owner that was that on point about his commissioner. That was unafraid to say those things, Stephen. Maybe you can remember one, but I can't.
Well, the one who comes to mind is Al Davis. I think he's probably did that because you know, he fought with him tooth and nail and went to court against the NFL.
Maybe, yep.
I don't think he had any love for Pete Rozelle or Paul Tagliabue. But yeah, it's, you know, I think I think Kraft assumed that this suspension would get knocked down or mitigated. I think if the cell phone thing hadn't happened or they hadn't found out about it, maybe that's true. And if Tom Brady had been willing to admit that he did it, they said they would have cut it in half or more. So again, I'm not sure who he should be let down by, but I'm deeply unimpressed with Roger Goodell, but that's not new. But I'm deeply unimpressed with Roger Goodell, but I think Tom Brady did it.
So on the buffoon question, we'll just go with E, all the above. That works for you?
Yeah, maybe all the above, yeah.
Okay, good chatting with you, Steve. We'll talk next week. Enjoy a Cueto tonight, and it sounds like Price on Sunday.
Yeah, not bad, huh? See you guys.
See ya.
Stephen Brunt, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. Check out the 2015 Audi A4. With timeless style, German performance credentials, and unrivaled craftsmanship, the A4 is the ultimate overachiever. See for yourself.
We're going to get into that. I want to know where you weigh out. That's the question of the day for you on the text line, outside of the obvious price mania and anything Flames that we always accept. Who's the biggest buffoon in Deflategate? Who looks the worst? Bruce and I are going to come back and have our votes on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.